Welcome to Level With Us, the bonusode. We're releasing some unheard content from previous interviews to explore a topic more in depth, look at it through a new lens, or different perspective. These shorter sodes will also give us the opportunity to answer any questions from listeners. So if you want to know more about a topic, or you just want us to look at a housing-related issue that we haven't yet covered, go to the Level With Us page on our website, homeportohio.org, and fill out the form. All right, let's get into it. Eighth bonusode, we are back with Matt Martin for Primer and Opportunity Mapping. Opportunity Mapping is a product of a collaborative effort between the Ohio Housing Finance Agency, or OFA, and the Curwen Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnicity at The Ohio State University. It was created to support affordable housing development for households and families and promote compliance with the Fair Housing Act. The Curwen Institute developed the Opportunity Mapping framework and has consulted on related matters for public sector agencies, nonprofits, and community groups in more than 20 states across the nation. The Opportunity Index uses a number of indicators to identify the many dimensions of a strong, vibrant, and healthy community, like proximity to jobs, amenities, education, healthcare. And it uses these to identify areas of greater opportunity, particularly regarding the siting of family housing in Ohio.
The origin of opportunity mapping actually comes from a class action lawsuit in the Baltimore area back, I think, in the 1990s initially, where a group of around 14,000 residents of HUD housing in the Baltimore area were suing HUD over the over-concentration of the units, the almost exclusive concentration of those units in what are really low opportunity communities, high poverty communities, and the lack of any of those units existing in higher opportunity parts of the Baltimore region. Mm-hmm. And so the founder and first executive director of the Curwen Institute, Dr. John Powell, testified as part of the remedy of that case to essentially give HUD tools with which they could begin to locate housing units in other parts of the Baltimore region and not only in those parts that they had historically had them in. So opportunity mapping was developed for that very purpose, but Curwen went on to evolve that tool and use it in a lot of different contexts. During my time there, we used it in support of community organizations that were rallying to make sure that Recovery Act dollars from the federal and state governments were being distributed evenly across their states, both in New York and in Florida. We also worked with grantees of the Sustainable Communities Initiative. That was a partnership between, I think, the EPA and the DOT at the federal level to promote and support equitable and sustainable regional planning. And we worked with the Puget Sound region in Seattle. We worked with the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and that, of course, had a particular focus on what it looked like to recover equitably from Hurricane Katrina in that region and to make the region more resilient in the future to any future storms. One of my former colleagues at the Curwen Institute, David Norris, did a lot of environmental justice research as well in the Birmingham, Alabama area, gotcha. Looking at their, the effect of the railroads and what neighborhoods they went through. Mm-hmm. That was definitely an application, as well as lead paint in the Toledo area,
right.
And helping to inform what communities were most impacted by that.
Mm. That's always really interested me, and I don't know, we're seeing patterns here where communities are built, where disinvestment or investment occurs, what neighborhoods we feel we can sacrifice to other sorts of progress, quote-unquote.
There's challenges in every era of a life of a city.
Right.
We have some right now in Columbus with not only housing, but with transportation as well. But I think we're in a place where rather than just adding new highways or adding new lanes of highways, though though we are doing some major, you know, rerouting of interchanges downtown and around downtown, I think from a broader transportation standpoint, we're more serious about mass transit through initiatives like LinkUS and trying to connect that to our housing investments. So I think we've learned from the past, at least on some fronts.
Where do you think that change of heart came from?
Well, I think that once you see the cumulative effect of a lot of those things, you see that, like, you know, the end of highways is what? More pavement, more, you know, impervious surface, and that it doesn't actually address our traffic challenges. If anything, it eventually opens up the possibility for there just to be more traffic. And so I think that, and understanding that not everybody has vehicles, understanding how that affects the labor market, and realizing as a broader community that we need options. You add climate change on all of that, and the effect that, you know, more emissions has on the environment, both in a long-term perspective, but even locally, and thinking about clean air and, you know, how it exacerbates asthma rates and those types of things. I mean, it makes sense to also be thinking about modes of transportation that don't create as much pollution.
Right.
So I think we're seeing a lot of different things influence it.
Yeah.
Hopefully some learning from history as well. The economics of it also play into a lot of those decisions. And, you know, once you start really acknowledging what the cost of auto-focused transportation is, particularly single occupancy vehicles, you realize that we can move more people more efficiently and for less money if we also incorporate things like bus rapid transit, bicycle infrastructure, more dense development that allows more people to walk places they need to go, and you realize, like, actually there's a cost part to it as well, and we can't sustain just endless highway construction.
A pilot project brought opportunity mapping into OFA's 2016-2017 Qualified Allocation Plan, or QAP, offering bonus points to family housing proposals in moderate and high opportunity areas in the state's six largest counties, so Franklin, Summit, Cuyahoga, Lucas, Montgomery, and Hamilton. The goal behind this work was to incentivize housing choices in higher opportunity census tracts, and begin to address the challenge of concentrated poverty in a lot of urban neighborhoods. For 2018-2019, OFA expanded the use of opportunity mapping to incentivize the location of low-income family housing across the entire state. Opportunity, according to OFA and Kerwin, is about external conditions and places, not individuals. Housing opportunity is that which puts people in proximity to schools, jobs, safety, and transportation. But that opportunity has been unequal. In urban areas, through racist policies, like redlining and restrictive covenants, and in rural areas, through the movement of manufacturing facilities to other places around the country and the globe.
That began toward the end of my time at the Kerwin Institute, where we started developing opportunity indexes for OFA to inform that QAP and to help incentivize and subsidize affordable housing construction in higher opportunity areas, because there was a case in Texas, I think it was in, I forget which city in Texas, if it was Austin or Houston. In any case, there was a case brought to the Housing Finance Agency of Texas that they had over-concentrated their LIHTC credits and developments in high poverty, low opportunity areas. And so a lot of housing finance agencies, including Ohio's, started paying attention to that and looking at their own distribution of credit developments and realizing, like, it's a challenge everywhere.
Right.
And so I think Kerwin supported some of that early kind of reconnaissance work to think about the legal vulnerabilities here in Ohio, but then OFA continued that work with Kerwin to develop an index that they could incorporate into and incentivize. And I know that a lot of developers are finding that to be challenging because, you know, to get the credits, And to do work like that in higher opportunity areas changes your cost structure,
right?
Because the cost of land is higher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that OFA should only incentivize tax credit development in those places, or that it should be that way forever. But, and this is one of the key lessons that I learned through all the research that I did with the Kerwin Institute, is you can't just do place-based investment and you can't just do mobility investment. That really, we need a strategy that incorporates both.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough to balance that at times, and it's tough to coordinate all of the funding streams that are available to make sure we're doing that. But you can't just choose one and abandon the other.
Right.
We've got to be doing both. So, because that's what helps promote a more comprehensive access to opportunity, where all people have some degree of housing choice and ways to get into housing and communities that offer the opportunities that they need, that they and their families need.
For 2024-2025, OFA has an interactive mapping tool available that allows you to view how neighborhoods, towns, cities, and counties vary in access to opportunity. Through it, you can see how different census tracts rank. I'll put a link to the tool in the show notes.
Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.